Just as an example, if this audience hasn't ever delved into Swedish, I'm sure they can understand the following, right? Jag heter Oscar. Jag heter Oscar. Vad heter du? Vad heter du? Jag heter Oscar, right? It's super, like everybody gets that.
Alvaro.
Var bor du? Var bor du? Bor du i Berlin? Bor du i München? Bor du i Tokyo? Jag bor i Sverige.
Hi, Oscar.
Hey, Alvaro. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. And well, welcome to the podcast, first of all. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Pleasure to be here. Pleasure is all mine.
Okay. And so as usual, why don't you start by telling us about your experience with languages, like your early experiences in Sweden, your struggles, if you had them, anything that comes to mind that you think it can be useful for the audience.
Okay. Well, so I'm from Sweden. I learned Swedish, obviously, but I was always interested in video games growing up, and today I'm learning Japanese, and I have been for a few years, and I think that harkens back to those days as well. But I didn't know it by then, so I was playing games in English back then, and I had to call for my dad to translate. Like Donkey Kong 64, stuff like that, whenever there was a cutscene, and there wasn't a lot of them back then. Couldn't really play any role-playing games, except for, you know... Are you playing games at all, Alvaro?
I mean, for example, in my classes, you know, I've experimented with board games, for example.
Board games, okay. Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I've played a couple of role-playing games when I was a kid.
Right. But does a game like Diablo, does that tell you anything?
I've heard about it, but I think I've never played it. No, but is it like a role-playing game as well? Or?
Yeah, it's kind of like a hack and slash role-playing game. It was made by Blizzard in the 90s, and I was playing that, but that's a pretty dialogue heavy game, I would say, but I couldn't really understand anything back then. But one day I remember my dad was getting kind of sick of having to run, because he was a floor down as well. So he had to run up the stairs and help me, because I couldn't go to him with the text and everything. So one day he got kind of sick and tired of it, and I just went, okay, I'm gonna try to understand it on my own, I suppose. And I just, you know, and you replay these games so many times, and eventually I don't really know how. But eventually I got pretty good at English at a fairly early age, I suppose, fairly young age. And I believe that story is not unique to me at all, and probably not unique to Swedish people either. But my experience is that Swedish people get English pretty early on. And I suppose not only from games, because we weren't all playing Diablo. But we did get home from school and we watched shows like Full House and Fresh Prince in Bel-Air, Friends, stuff like that. Frasier, Married with Children. I don't know where we found joy in that show when we were like 11 years old, but it was on at least, and it was marginally more fun than watching the news, I suppose.
Right.
Sorry, I had I have a colleague here, apparently. I guess it wasn't a conscious effort, is what I'm trying to say. I wasn't learning a language. I was consuming stuff that I liked consuming and loved consuming. So we were all interested in Hollywood movies and video games and music from the US and England and stuff like that. So it just kind of came naturally.
Right. That's like a common theme. Like I always talk about it, like, you know, the importance of how to put it into words, like not trying to learn a language, I was going to say, but not like focusing on message, on communication, as opposed to the language itself, mm-hmm. form, right? It seems to be the way that a lot of people learn English or other languages in their childhood because they weren't trying to learn the language. I mean, I guess somehow it's there in the back of your mind, you know, that you're hoping it's going to help you. But in your case, you're so immersed in the game. You're so interested in playing the game, in understanding what's going on, what you have to do to get going, things like mm-hmm. that in a way, you kind of forget that you're listening to a different language.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel it's the same now with books. I read a lot of books right now. I guess it's the fall. It has to do with the season, I suppose, because I've been slacking off on that front during the rest of the year. But now it's fall, and I'm reading maybe two books a week at least, and they're all in English. And I never think about that as a barrier. And I guess sometimes I stumble on a word that I don't really miss, but I just accept it and I try to figure it out from context. So that I don't get into this loop that I'm kind of in with Japanese, where I really need to look up words every 5 or 10 minutes or something just to figure out what's actually happening.
Right. We'll get into Japanese in a moment, but yeah, that's interesting. I also talk about that many times. Like when you're reading a book, especially when reading books, but with any resource, but people, again, because of the traditional grammar approach that taught us to pay attention to form and things like that, to a specific word, I understand why we do that, right? But we tend to try to pay attention to the specific words. Like, did the author use this, I didn't even know what the word is, this conjugation or this verb or whatever, as opposed to focusing on content, on meaning, which is the most important thing. And ironically, the way you're actually going to learn the language, right? But what I mean by that is when you're reading a book, I mean, it depends on how well you understand that language. But for the most part, in your case, you're reading it in English. And there's always going to be 2, 3, 4 words here and there that you don't understand. But again, most of the times, like you said, you're going to figure them out of context.
Yeah.
Many other times you're not, but that doesn't have any impact on you understanding what's going on. And only if you feel like understanding that word is necessary for you to understand what's going on, like it's really key, that's like the only situation in which I personally look up a word if I'm reading a book in a foreign language. If I don't understand it, I can't figure it out because of the context, and I feel like I need to know what that means in order to keep going, you know? And even then, you also have like two options when it comes to how are you gonna figure out what that means. Meaning, like, one is just to go to the translation, like quick translation into your language or whatever the language is. Or you can even look it up in the dictionary in your target language, right?
So exactly, yeah.
Right, instead of just going for the translation, which, I mean, right away you're going to understand what it means. But I think it's even better if you find a dictionary in the target language that explains what that word means in your target language.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of that's a high level thing to do, though, right? To be able to search it, for instance, in Japanese, to search for the dictionary definition of a word. But once you get there and once you feel like you're kind of knocking at that door, yeah, definitely that's a huge thing to stay immersed, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Right. So before we get into Japanese, I have one last question about when you started with English that you said, because I've interviewed other people from, I've interviewed a friend from Finland, for example, and we talked about why it is that Scandinavian people in general, speak English so well. Like in other European countries, like Southern European countries, for example, we tend to look at you guys we tend to give the credit to the school system, which I think is not the reason. And my friend from Finland told me the same thing. Like, it's not that the school system is different. Like, the language classes in the school system were pretty similar to what we all have in mind, like grammar, conscious effort, and so on. But it's about those other activities that you mentioned, like playing games, watching series, and things like that in the target language, because, for example, in Spain, it's all that. So I remember watching The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but in Spanish, right? So what do you think is the reason why? Because I've been to Sweden a couple of times, to Denmark, and you can talk with anyone in English, and you're gonna be fine. And their English is pretty good. Like, and I'm not just talking young people, which is the case in a lot of countries. I'm talking like 70 years old, year old, and people like that, that they can perfectly communicate in English. Why do you think that is?
Oh man, I could only guess. I don't really know. Maybe there are similarities in the language, then that kind of it's to our benefit. But I could only guess as to why. Then again, man, you're from Spain, mm-hmm. and I feel like when you think about Spain and you consider Spain as a country, it's so full of history and culture and stuff to be proud of. And you have, and we look to Spain as well whenever we're interested in like football or mm-hmm. whatever it may be. And when we want to go travel, we want to go to Madrid or Barcelona, stuff like that.
Right.
So maybe we're a country that lacks, at least maybe we did lack an identity or confidence. I don't know, man, but I feel like we were quick to jump on the US train and be interested in Hollywood and stuff like that.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, as you were talking, I was thinking that, you know, like the grass is always greener on the other side, right? Like we look at you because of your English. You look at us because of our identity or football or whatever it is. You always put other people on a pedestal and forget about yourself or your, you know. But yeah, that makes sense what you mean, because, for example, in Spain, I mean, because Spanish is such a powerful language, because there's so many countries that speak it as a native language, because I've been thinking about this a lot, because I've seen it in, like, here in Poland where I live, or countries like Romania, where the language are not so, quote-unquote, popular or powerful in the world, like English, Spanish, French, that they tend to speak other languages better than we do in Spain, for example, that French people do, and definitely, you know, American, British, like native English speakers. And I don't know if it's because we feel like our language is so popular or so useful, right? Because obviously, English is number one, but Spanish, you can travel to a lot of countries where it's the native language, right? And there's the recent music movement with all the Latin music and so on. So it's like it's really popular all over the world. So we feel like we don't need to learn other languages as much as someone from Sweden, like you said, or like I have friends from Poland, of course, but Romania or countries with, again, quote-unquote, no so popular languages.
But when you grew up, did you watch dubbed movies? Movies dubbed? Yeah.
All dubbed, yeah.
Ah, okay.
Like, Spanish television is all dubbed. Like, movies, series, it's dubbed.
Yeah, that's probably a big part of it, right?
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. That's probably a big part of it then, I suppose.
Right, because the interesting part is, you look at, or you compare Spain with Portugal, like we live in the same peninsula, and I'm gonna generalize here, but we're similar characters, things like that, and they speak English in general. They're master of English just because of that, because they don't doubt anything. Mm-hmm. And it's also the reason why if you're trying to learn Portuguese, it's hard to find resources from Portugal, actually.
Okay.
When I started learning Portuguese, I learned it from Brazil, because first of all, it's easier because of the accent, but there's way more resources. Because sometimes I've talked about in my case, if I'm trying to learn Italian, French, Portuguese, instead of trying to watch original series, I started by watching American series dubbed into Portuguese, French, Italian, because they're easier to understand. But if you're trying to learn Portuguese from Portugal, it's hard to find those because they don't exist, because they watch the original version, which is great for them, and which is why their English is much better than ours.
Okay.
Despite being pretty close geographically, even like, you know, the characters and things like that. It's interesting.
Right. Yeah, because there are very few movies dubbed to Swedish these days. I guess it's kids' movies, right? And some family movies as well. There were like the Harry Potter movies, I believe were dubbed. And nowadays, it's kind of unthinkable as a Swedish adult to watch a dubbed movie, right? We all watch the, in the original language, which is most commonly English still. Yeah. That has, however, made us, I feel like we're kind of narrow-minded. We all kind of watch the same thing. I don't know if that's a global thing or if that is a Scandinavian thing, but we do watch now it's Game of Thrones, now it's Succession, now it's Mad Men, now it's Breaking Bad. And we all still watch the same thing. And that's a big reason. I know we're going to get to the Japanese, but that's sort of a big thing for me, breaking out of that loop and watching stuff that nobody else is watching and that my neighbors have no chance of watching it. They wouldn't understand it because it may not even be available in with English subtitles.
Right, because also you're thinking, if it was otherwise, you might be watching an Italian series dubbed into your language. Right. I think that may have changed a little bit with Netflix, because I think you can change that. Not in all series, but if you like Netflix or other platforms like that, I think you can watch. I don't know if it works for like all directions, but on Netflix, I've watched like different like series from different countries dubbed into other languages, and sometimes they're available. For example, I remember because when I was in Spain, if you have Netflix Spain, most series, you can watch the original version, obviously, the Spanish version, and French or Italian sometimes. If you're here in Poland, you can watch the original version, Polish version, Russian, German. So it depends. But I found that if you change the language of the entire account, you have that additional language available.
Oh, okay.
Some series. So if your case, you're trying to learn Japanese, if you change the entire account language to Japanese in some series, besides the languages that are available where you are, I can imagine, like, I don't know, maybe Norwegian or no idea. You're going to have the extra option of Japanese on some series.
Okay.
And again, it's the same idea that I talked about before, like sort of like third country series. So I'm learning Italian. I'm watching an American series dubbed into Italian, right?
Right.
So that's available with Netflix and platforms like that recently.
Cool. I've had the experience that at that point it comes down to the translator and you put a lot of faith into the translator being excellent at their job, equally excellent to the original writers, hopefully.
Right.
So here's the thing. There's a lot of great shows coming out of South Korea right now. This is a huge boom of television and movies from South Korea. And a lot of them are, you know, if you use a VPN, you pretend that you're in Japan, you can watch them in Japanese on Netflix, which I would never do. Well, is it legal? It's legal, right? If it is legal, then it's something I would do. But if it's legal, it's something I would never do. Ever.
Yeah, it's a good question because I've also thought about it. Because I mean, there's paid services, right? So you would think it is, but I'm not sure.
Right.
I have no idea. So I would just make things up.
If it is legal, then they're gonna have to put a lot of people in prison. I
suppose.
We're all using it. So, but then I find that the lips don't sink. Right, and also, I've had this experience as well, where the subtitles in Japanese are not at all the same as the actual audio.
Mm.
So it might be similar, but it's not perfect, and that makes it super confusing, right? Because then I'm connecting the wrong kanji symbol, which they use in Japan and China, to the wrong audio. So
that
can have a negative effect, I feel like.
Yeah, like for example, here in Poland, it's called Lektor in Poland, which is a weird dubbing experience. Let me explain what I mean. So in Spain, we have dubbing, but you know, they have different characters. I mean, different actors in the studio, like, dubbing the different characters, like one person for each character. But here in Poland, they have a thing called Lektor, which is normally a guy who does all the voices.
Oh.
And he's been like with no emotion whatsoever. And so you hear this guy and the original version in the background. So it's super weird.
Mm-hmm.
So he's like, yes, tack, man. And it's like, I mean, as an experience, it's horrible. I have to say, an experience when it comes to enjoying what you're watching. I don't know if it can be helpful for some, you know, because it's easy to understand as a person who's not a native Polish speaker. So I can use that to learn Polish, actually. But I don't know, it's just weird. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just wanted to mention because of the different experiences, like you said, whether the subtitles are correct or not. Yeah.
I have a dream that's going to happen to me where... Not a sleeping dream, but an ambition that's going to happen to me one day, where a friend is going to be like, I really want to play this game in Japanese, but it's not translated yet. So could you please help me play it? And I'll go, yes, I can. And be that exact guy, right? Who says, who just live translates everything. Because then my Japanese would finally be useful. Because so far, it really hasn't been. I still haven't ever been to Japan, and there's very few Japanese people to speak with here. The only ones I do speak to are basically teachers and iTalki.
Okay.
That's not useful for anybody else except me. But I don't. One day I'm gonna go there, possibly next year.
So let's go there now. So when did you start learning Japanese? Why? How? Walk us through the entire story.
Right. Yeah, so the why of it is really, I don't know. I believe I started sometime during late 2018, like maybe early 2019. And there are three separate alphabets that you... It's not alphabets, set of symbols that you need to learn. And I started with the easiest one, which is called hiragana. Mm-hmm. And noticed that it was so cool to be able to recognize these characters that, you know, you've kind of seen if you walk around town and you go into a ramen shop, for instance. There's a lot of those symbols around, and it was super cool that meant something to me all of a sudden. And it takes about a week to learn all of the hiragana. And then there's a set of characters called katakana. That also takes another week, and then, but then you have two sets, so you kind of need to get used to it. But when you have them, you have them. Okay. And then there's a tricky step, which is reading the kanji, and there are about 2,100 kanji that you need to know in order to, like, be able to newspapers and stuff like that, or normal books in Japanese. And I'm still working through that. I'm at maybe 1,300 kanji. I'm not, but I suppose the last 800 there are the rarest ones. So I can kind of get by pretty well with the ones I do know. Okay. Maybe I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit, but that was my starting point, learning hiragana. And then being able to read like my first sentence in Japanese. This was just all online through a free service. But I felt like that was something, a very unique, cool experience that I knew that my friends weren't able to do, my girlfriend wasn't able to do, mm-hmm. my parents hadn't been able to do that, and now I was kind of taking my first steps on this path. And I knew that at the end of this path, there are things that I've actually loved growing up, like video games and anime and movies and music and Final Fantasy and Chrono Trigger and all of that good stuff. So it hasn't been hard to stay motivated, definitely.
Okay, and how about oral input? Like, do you start watching something or, yeah?
So yeah, I started pretty early on listening to a podcast called Nihongo Konteppei, which has been a huge help for me and a huge inspiration in terms of my own podcast. I do have I don't think we've mentioned that yet, but I run a podcast in Sweden in simple Swedish with quite a large audience, and I had no clue that would happen, but that was all because Nihongo Konteppei, I would say. Just noticing that, this is really helping me out, and it's really, really, seems really, really easy to do. Especially if you just have a microphone and you have the know-how, you know, of putting together an audio clip into podcast. I'm forgetting the question almost, but my journey with Japanese, it definitely takes way longer time than you think it's going to take with a language like Japanese. If I knew back then how long this journey would be, I probably would never have started it. Just because, I believe it's probably going to take until maybe 2029 until I can call myself nearly fluent, right?
Yeah.
It's like taking a Swedish sentence and then flipping it around, mm-hmm. and reading it in three separate alphabets and trying to do that fluently. It just takes a massive amount of time.
Right. Yes, sometimes, before we go on, I have to say that the way I discovered your content was through your podcast. And like I said, off camera, I'm not looking to learn Swedish right now, but I went through a couple of your episodes and I really loved them because they're comprehensible. That's all we need as language students in the end. And I never studied Swedish, never tried to learn it. So I was a complete beginner. I started from scratch and I could understand the episode. So I just want to say that I totally recommend it. Just check it out.
Thanks, man.
If anyone interested in learning Swedish, go ahead.
Thank you.
I guess when you're talking about that Japanese podcast that you mentioned, it was comprehensible as well. Right, so that's how you could understand it and improve your ability to understand the language.
Yeah, exactly. And coming back to what I believe we talked about in the beginning here, I quickly came to the realization that I need to accept the stuff that I don't know. I can't keep pausing all of the time and looking up words. I'm just keep listening. And I'm going to listen to 100 episodes this week, something like that. And then I'm going to go back next week and listen to them all again. And noticing that the first episode is now way easier for me to understand. When you do something like that, instead of just progressing, climbing, then you never have a chance to see how far you've come. If you know that you're going to take a lot of walks with the dog this week, or you're going to do a lot of dishes or whatever, just getting into a challenge where I'm going to listen to Nihongo Konteppei, in my instance, all of the time, then that's a fun challenge. And then you can just go back to the earlier episodes and see, wow, now I'm better now. And that's my aim with my podcast as well, to my listeners.
Cool. Yeah, because I always talk about it because, you know, because you're in your head every day, right? It's hard to measure how much your ability to understand has improved.
Mm.
It's like weight, for example. Like, unless it's a dramatic change, you don't feel it as much either way because you're inside yourself every day. But if someone looks at you from the outside and hasn't seen you for months, they can feel the difference. right? So, like, I talk about that as one of the ways in which I try to, how to put it into words. Like, I try to see how my journey is going. Like, I try to see that the process is working, actually, right? Because you're in your head every time. So it's hard to feel how much you've improved on a daily basis, because, again, but if you look at, so what I do is I look at how much I could understand 6 months ago and how much I can understand now, or the types of resources that I can understand now as opposed to 6 months ago. But what you're mentioning is a nice way to do it, because you listen to that single episode, I don't know, 3 weeks ago, and you remember the struggle or how much it took you to actually understand that. But you look at it through the lens of today and you're like, oh my goodness, there's a huge difference. I remember that, like listening to that episode 3 weeks ago. Mm. So it can also be a way to sort of reflect on the fact that the process works.
Exactly. Yeah, we do tend to self-criticize, I believe. We're always way too hard on ourselves, and we feel like we need to be better in every imaginable way. We're searching for eternal growth in every way. We need to get richer and more beautiful and more fit and better at Japanese for some reason, instead of just kind of enjoying the journey. And I know I said earlier that I wouldn't have started this journey if I knew how long it was. But the thing is, it's not a 10-year process where you don't understand anything and then one day it all clicks and now I automatically know Japanese. Because now I'm at a point where I can play a game like Chrono Trigger, which I remember playing in my boy room growing up, Chrono Trigger translated into English, thinking it was the most amazing game. It's for the Super Nintendo.
Okay.
Like it still is. It's like the gold standard for role-playing games, and especially Japanese role-playing games. Still today, amazing music, amazing story, everything. Great fighting system. And now I'm able to play a game like Chrono Trigger pretty, I don't need to strain myself too far. I don't need to look up too many words. I can just kind of enjoy Chrono Trigger in Japanese. And that would have been an impossibility during the first 3 years learning. So it does pay off for sure. And that's something that I have, right? Because Japanese is a language so connected with stuff like games, stuff that I enjoy. And I tend to have to struggle now focusing on what do my listeners, what's their Chrono Trigger, right? Because Sweden, we have nothing like that. Zero game development in Swedish, at least. Of course, we have game development, but it's still deeply connected to the American culture and stuff like that. There's other things that seem to be more connected to spiritual stuff. That's the reason for learning Swedish.
Okay.
I feel like my listeners are imagining Sweden as this sort of a quiet, calm country with a lot of forest. And that's all true, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also not my ordinary weekday that's like that, right? It's probably a lot like everybody else's.
Yeah, I think that works for a lot of things. I mean, like, people think of Spain as, you know, beaches, party, and things like that. It's part of it, of course, but yeah, it's not everyone's life on a daily basis, right? But yeah, I mean, it's so important what you said, because sometimes I talk about the fact that my ultimate goal when learning the language is being able to communicate in the language, of course. But in some of them, just getting to a point in which I can understand native resources or play games, like you said, is pleasant or rewarding enough for me to be okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, back to your point, we don't need to get to the mountain top every time, right? It's okay. Just the joy that being able to understand content in other languages brings to your life, like I said, is rewarding enough to be okay getting 50% or whatever you want to call it. It's hard to measure, right?
Right.
And with Japanese, sometimes I almost think like we fall in love with the possibility of learning a new alphabet or of reading a new set of characters or symbols. but with languages so different from our own, Santosh, I think is better to just focus on oral input. And we'll get to the written part later on, right?
Yeah, exactly. My oral input or reading practice or whatever it may be, whatever we're interested in today, that's going to be
sure.
Whatever it may be. And I feel like the best tip that I could give to anybody trying to learn a language that's worked for me is all of the stuff that you're consuming, if you can somehow change that into your target language, it's just going to fly by and you're going to get to a very high level very, very fast. But you do need to have that discipline of actually changing out all of the podcasts that you love today and trying to find substitutes.
Right.
And Netflix shows and possibly video games. There are actually a few video games in Swedish that you could play, like Ratchet and Clank is a series that is available in Swedish, I believe.
Right.
Don't have a ton of more examples beyond that. Little Big Planets, I believe, is available in Swedish as well.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, it requires a lot of research work beforehand, of course, but like finding those podcasts and so on. But yeah, that's one of the keys as well. Like, whatever thing you're doing, whatever resources you're consuming in your own language already, if you can change the language you're trying to learn, that's going to speed up the process, because you're going to enjoy the process so much that, again, it's going to feel like you're not actually learning the language. And now, back to your question about the games at the beginning, now that I'm learning German,
yeah.
And a couple of months ago, I started like a sort of experiment in which I'm getting... So basically for 2 years and a half, I've been listening to German for like 20 minutes a day, because I love languages and I'm listening to other languages every day. But in those two and a half years, I got like 300 hours of oral exposure to the language. So my ability to understand has dramatically improved, but I can't communicate in the language yet, which is totally fine. And it's the way it works. But back in early September this year, I started, like the last 2 months, I started getting 3 hours of German input a day. And one of the things I'm doing is, now I remember there was one PC game that I used to play a lot when I was a kid, which was Heroes of Might and Magic.
Nice.
And so what I'm doing is finding like gamers or YouTubers, like German YouTubers who are actually playing that game. So like gameplays about Heroes, because I enjoyed the game. I remember what it was like. And yeah, I could watch that all day. And back to your point, it doesn't feel like learning, but you're actually listening to the language the whole time.
Exactly.
That's the ideal scenario that we're looking for.
That's true.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to Japanese, like I've never tried to learn Japanese. I'm not an expert, but recently I had like a Japanese teacher on my podcast. It was actually a live streaming, and she talked about, because she's Japanese, but she lives in Mexico, so we did it in Spanish, right? But she talks about the experience with her giant daughter, because they live in Mexico, like I said, but they're both Japanese. Like, she and her husband, they're both Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And she talked about the fact that they started reading to her in Japanese with hiragana, like simple books for kids at the beginning, with no intent to teach her the alphabet or things like that, just for the sake of telling stories and so on. But some of the books had like text, right? But they weren't even pointing at the text on things like that weirdos try to do, right? And then later on, she, the daughter, started to read books with kanji with the hiragana on top to help her read it, right? Because kanji characters are new to her. And they were actually amazed by the fact that she could read those books, right? And she was slow at the beginning. She told me, like, the first few months, she was slow because she would see the kanji characters, the hiragana on top, and she would, like, I don't know what it sounds like, but imagine if it's English. This is the... So that's the way she was reading at the beginning.
Mm.
But pretty quickly, she said that she was picking up the pace. And she, I mean, like in several months, she was reading like normal Japanese person, quote unquote. So what I want to get to is there might even be a way to naturally learn alphabets like that. So that's what we were discussing in that session. Because I always feel like when you're in Japanese or kanji or things like that, we tend to memorize or go about it in a let's study way. But, you know, I have the feeling there's a natural way to acquire those characters, if you will.
Right, yeah, the Japanese are brilliant at that because a lot of, like, all of Nintendo's games, for instance, have furigana, it's called, when the hiragana is above the kanji. And those are all great for beginners. It is a little bit of a crutch eventually, right? That you kind of like taking off the support wheels on a bike and actually starting to ride. And so yeah, there's a brilliant channel for that called Game Gengo on YouTube. It means game language. Where he, Matt, I support him on Patreon, and I encourage everybody who's learning Japanese to do the same. He's worth every dollar that he gets, or every yen, I suppose. And yeah, he kind of ranks games based on difficulty, the addition or the lack of furigana, which is the symbols above. Whether you can hear the language or only read it, whether you can actually replay the language. There are games like Fire Emblem, for instance, where you can replay every dialogue, but there aren't furigana. But that's a super good game to sort of get your bearing beyond furigana games, right? Where you can go beyond, you can read a sentence, and then you can listen to it as many times as you want to. You can just replay the audio, and if you don't understand a kanji but still hear the audio, then you can quite easily look it up. And that's a good way to get used to reading as well. So I guess that's something that's only available for Japanese learners.
Okay. So, well, at least all the resources below that you're telling me about. Did you say like Game Gengo was the name?
Yeah, Game Gengo.
Okay. And is that the Mad versus Japan guy? Or?
No.
Anyway, I'll leave all the links that all the resources that we've mentioned, obviously your podcast, in the description, because they're interesting to me as well, so I want to check them out.
Cool.
Yeah, all right. And yeah, but back to your podcast.
Okay,
you said you were inspired by that Japanese podcast to start recording episodes. But what's your goal? What are your episodes like? Like, how long? What are you just talking to yourself, or what are they like?
Yeah, I monologue. I speak to myself. Well, I don't. I speak to the listener, and I ask questions, and I talk about my opinions on a given subject. And every episode is basically centered around a subject. So that could be grilling or Midsummer or PlayStation 5 or mm-hmm. Apple versus PC, well, okay. Mac versus PC, whatever it may be. And I tend to keep the episodes short. I try to stay at like 7 minutes. Sometimes I go shorter, sometimes a little bit longer, sometimes a lot longer. But that's just because I want to give the listener a fresh start after a few minutes. Because when you get bogged down into a complicated subject like grilling, for instance, but you lack the context because you couldn't understand what I said a few minutes ago, then it's really demoralizing, and you tend to quit and start listening to a Stephen King audiobook instead, which is also worthwhile. But it doesn't take you closer to learning the language. So I tend to keep it short, and I feel like I'm not a language expert at any level at all. but I do feel like I've gained a sort of sixth sense or an instinct, intuition for when I need to contextualize something, when I need to use a synonym, when I need to define something, or last case scenario, translating it into English.
Right.
Some words you just gotta do that, but none comes to mind at the moment. But
Like abstract terms in general.
Right.
Like, I'm used to doing that in my Spanish classes. Like you said, it's a skill or a sixth sense, whatever you want to call it. That you learn to be more comprehensible for your students or your listeners, whatever that is.
Hmm.
Like, what if I use this word instead of that one? So it just, after some time, it just comes natural. So you know which one to use. In my case, there's, because of so many cognates between English and Spanish, I know that if I use this word, they might not understand what I mean. But if I use this other one, they will, because it's similar to the one in English.
Hmm.
Little things like that. But like I said at the beginning, I've gone through a couple of your episodes because I said I'm not trying to learn Swedish yet. But I really enjoy them because, again, the most important thing, they were comprehensible. And I started from scratch. And because also I read, like, your idea is to create them in a way that, in a progressive way, right? Like the first one is like super simple. This is my name. I'm from Sweden, things like that. With, like you said, a lot of questions to help us, the audience, understand what you mean. A lot of examples, like, what's my name? So you give, like, is it John? Is it Michael? So you might not understand the question the first time around, but you, because of the context, because of the examples, you're, okay, so he's asking about what my name is, or he's talking about his name. Then you talk about Sweden, that you're from Sweden. I remember that. And so I guess that's the way it works for all the episodes.
Yeah, exactly. And it gets gradually more difficult. And the sort of standard phrases that I use, I tend to just fly by now even faster than I would probably when speaking to a friend, because we've heard them 200 times now. Like, how are you? I'm fine. I'm having a little bit of coffee. Stuff like that. It just tends to go very fast. But yeah, just as an example, if this audience hasn't ever delved into Swedish, mm-hmm. I'm sure they can understand the following, right? Jag heter Oskar. Jag heter Oskar. Vad heter du? Vad heter du? Jag heter Oskar, right? It's super, like, everybody gets that.
Alvaro.
Var bor du? Var bor du? Bor du i Berlin? Bor du i München? Bor du i Tokyo? Jag bor i Sverige. Something like that. We're kind of unclean because I used cities and then a country in my own example. But yeah, stuff like that. And it's super simple in the beginning. But then we kind of gradually move along. And at the point I am now with the episodes, like I do have 210 episodes available.
Nice.
So it's quite a high level now. But I encourage everybody to start at episode 1.
Yeah. I mean, cool. You start with Brad's. So. Like I said, that's what I did. And I was starting from scratch. Obviously, the example you mentioned, it was perfectly comprehensible, so that's great. But also, I'm starting to, I don't know if you compare it to German, like the do, you know, like for you, or things like that. But what I mean is that you don't even need to know German or any other related language to learn the language, because it is comprehensible by itself, which is, again, what the listener student needs. And it just shows the power of comprehensible input, right? Like, if you understand what you're listening to because of context, examples. In your case, it's a podcast, so there's no image, right? But if it's a video podcast, images, right? But just whatever you can do to make it comprehensible for the other person. And avoid translating as much as possible.
Yeah.
Back to what you said, if it's an abstract concept, it's more difficult, right? Because I do it in my classes, there's most things I just use, there's a gesture, an image that I'm going to use that they're going to understand right away. Mm. But it's, and like the concept of hope, for example, how do you gesture that out? How do you find an image for that? You know, if there's no other way, I'm fine with translation as well. But if you can avoid it, yeah.
Yeah, but I do feel like you, I try to act a lot, not like to an extreme, but if I'm talking about it being very sunny in Sweden today, it's sunny. I tend to keep a positive sort of energy, right? Or if it's a bit rainy, right, or a bit tired, right? And it's a bit cold. And I try to, you know, use cues like that to make it slightly more comprehensible. And you can use that with words like hope as well, right? Like how you say that word can help out.
Well, true.
Yeah, but then that's probably not going to happen as much when you actually go to Sweden and you meet Swedish people and they just talk like in a monotone style. But it's a good way to learn.
Yeah, I agree. And it's interesting because, yeah, again, that's another way in which you can help your students, audience, whatever it is. It just, like I said, gestures, examples, context, images, if it's a video podcast, and gestures as well. But also, yeah, your emotions or voice sound, like sound effects, right? Like even your own sound effect. Like if you're talking about a cat, just meow, and that's it.
So,
and
yeah,
that's what you need. And that actually works for podcasts as well.
Hmm.
Okay. Is there any other language that you're trying to learn right now, or anyone in your bucket list that you like to learn in the future?
I wish that I had the time, but I barely have the time to keep up with Japanese right now. I'm kind of stagnated. I'm at a plateau that I need to put a lot of time into breaking through and keep climbing. But that's fine. It's the nature of things. I have twin daughters who are 6 years old, and I have a young dog now. I run my own company. I'm in the process of starting a second one. Nice. And I do a lot of work. I'm also teaching, actually, at the university. So it's just too much at the moment. So it's stagnated a little bit. And I used Stephen King as an example earlier. I'm actually having a huge Stephen King phase right now where I'm listening to audiobooks.
Okay. Yeah.
Instead of listening to Japanese podcasts, which I would usually do. But yeah, I look forward to the day when I can finally say that I have a grasp of the Japanese language and I can now move on to German would be the obvious choice that you're learning right now. I studied German for 4 years in school. Can't remember much, but I feel like it. Have you watched the show Dark on Netflix?
I know what it is, but no, I haven't.
It's the best show literally the best show I've ever seen.
Actually, right?
Yeah, it's completely German, and it's insanely good. Don't look anything up, just watch it, because it takes weird turns. But we watched that, me and my girlfriend, we watched that for 3 seasons, and we felt like sometimes we weren't even looking at the subtitles. We talked about that, but we still kind of had it. So German and also French would be cool. French would probably take a long time, but it's just such a cool move to be able to speak French.
Like a beautiful language, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, that's also like, I love language learning in general. So up until September that I started the experiment with German, what I would normally do is spend 20 minutes every day on, like 20 minutes in German, 20 minutes on Russian, which I'm learning as well, 20 minutes on the languages that I already speak that I want to get better at, like Portuguese, Italian, French. And I love that. I love getting exposed to all of them every day. So, but I went to do something like the thing I'm doing with German. But I thought I was going to miss the other languages, but I'm actually enjoying it a lot. And obviously, for just the sake of how much time I'm getting exposed to the language as opposed to the 20 minutes that I was doing before, like my ability to understand it just improving so much in a couple of months. Again, I had been listening to German for 2 years before that. So I'm not claiming that, you know, in 2 months you can, and I don't speak the language yet. But when it comes to how much I can understand, it's crazy. And I'm actually loving it. Like, I thought I was going to miss the other languages, but I can always come back to them. And I also love reading. So sometimes I read in Portuguese. I do things like that. So, but the main point is that focusing on one language is obviously going to help you with that language, as opposed to just listening, reading to 4 or 5 different languages at the same time, which is totally fine. But, you know, it's a matter of time. So it's going to take you longer.
Right. And I'm also scared of getting them mixed up. But I guess you have many thoughts on that. Is that a risk?
I don't think it is if you learn them based on the right principles. What I mean by that is, if I try to learn Italian and Portuguese at the same time, the traditional way, I'm obviously going to mix them up because I'm relying on my conscious memory to sort of remember those words to be able to use them later. So I'm going to be thinking, is this word Portuguese or Italian? You know, to give you an example. But if you're acquiring those languages the natural way, don't tell me how it works, don't ask me how it works, but your brain knows. It's like, if I meet an Italian person, it might take 2 seconds, but my brain is like, Italian. All right, so let's speak Italian. And it's like Italian comes out of my mouth. And if I'm at a point in which sometimes I use Portuguese words, for example, first of all, that's totally fine. That's okay. Like, we're going to be able to communicate with no issues. But then what that means is that I might actually need more exposure to Italian in this case in order to actually use the right word. So what I mean is that the word I want to use in Italian but comes out as Portuguese, I just need to listen to Italian more time, right? And the reason I'm using Portuguese is because I've been listening to Portuguese for longer. So that's the structure that I've acquired to express that thought or that idea. You know what I mean? But for the most part, like I said, is the brain knows. Don't ask me how it works, but the brain knows. But obviously, if you're relying on your conscious memory, again, you're gonna be thinking, is this Italian or Portuguese? Or, but anyway,
yeah.
Sometimes I mix some words up, but that's totally fine. Like I said, I said something and let it realize that, oh, I think that word was Portuguese, actually. And I meant to speak Italian. But, yeah.
Right. Yeah, but it's just such a super impressive thing to be able to switch back and forth between multiple languages like that. And I feel like both of us are probably lucky to have both our native language and English as a sort of get-go. That's our starting point. Mm-hmm. Whilst people in the UK or US or Canada or Australia are kind of starting with one language. And I believe the bar is a lot higher than to actually start learning a second language, right? Because we've kind of gone through that already and noticed that it works. Imagine having those doubts. Is this even going to work out for me? Because I've never experienced that before.
Dude, that's a good point. And yeah, for native English, because you don't really need to relate out the
language. Exactly, yeah.
Like, if you love to do it like I do, or like you do, obviously you can. But you don't need to, which is probably the reason most people learn other languages, like for practical reasons, like being able to communicate or looking for a job, things like that. But they don't really need that because they can communicate anywhere they go.
We all adapted for them. And we did the work. Yeah.
Well, it's true. I never thought about that in that way. That because of my experience, your experience with English, when you're trying to learn a third language, you already know what worked and what didn't.
Yeah.
Meaning what worked, comprehensive input, what didn't, the traditional classes. I mean, things like that. Like, I remember going through school, high school, and so on for 15 years and not be able to communicate in English after all that. So I know that didn't work, right? But then I know what worked. what did work, which was watching the NBA in English because I love the sport. Things like that. So when you're learning a third language, you already know. Whereas native English speakers, they've never experienced that. The only contact they've had with other languages was probably high school, things like that. Like I have American students, and they always, it's always the same story. Like, I had Spanish in high school, but I don't remember it. Yeah.
Exactly.
So they don't really know what to do.
It's like probably like doing a backflip, something like that, where if you've never done it, like learning a second language, if you've never done it, say, oh, that seems really hard and uncomfortable. Yeah. And I might embarrass myself by landing on my head. But if we've already done it once and it works, and now here's the second trick, now you need to do a front flip. Okay, it's going to take a lot of practice, but I stuck the landing eventually with the other kind of flip, and now I just need to learn a new one. And I believe that then perhaps a fourth one comes even easier. And I've definitely had that with instruments. I'm in my studio right now in Karlstad, Sweden, and I learned playing piano I started taking lessons when I was 6, and I did that until I was about 13, and then I switched to guitar. And for every instrument I've learned since, it's gotten easier and easier, and you kind of have this base knowledge of music and how it works, and adding more instruments to that isn't at all as hard as it is to pick up the first one,
right,
when you're uncertain if it's even going to work out for you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think there's also that element of whenever you start doubting yourself in the process, because it's going to happen. Like, it happens to me all the time, even though I've learned other languages before. Now with German, there's going to be moments in which I'm going to doubt myself. Like, is this working? Things like that. But because it's already worked before, it sort of calms me down almost immediately. Like,
yeah.
That you're gonna go through those processes. You're gonna go through those situations in which, for example, you've been learning German in my case for a while. You feel like you're ready to start communicating. You meet someone, you start talking, and that specific day it doesn't come as natural or as fluent as you would like to, and as you think you're actually able to. So you start doubting yourself, like, fuck, you know, is this working? Where am I doing the right thing? But because it's worked before, I'm like, okay, this is just my mind playing tricks with me, you know, which the mind loves to do and things like that.
Exactly. And that one negative experience you had could keep you from trying again for years,
right?
Unfortunately. And I also feel like we talked about, we introduced ourselves to each other at you know, before we started recording, we talked about our ages, and we're both in our 30s. Mm-hmm. And I also sort of, this is perhaps a little bit depressing, but I started feeling like, what's the point? What's the point of doing this or that? And it's become more and more important to just focus on actually, I have to love it, because there's so many things that I love to do, right? That actually putting a lot of time and effort into something that I don't find fun to do anymore. It's just, I can't anymore, right? Because and that's something that's happened quite recently to me, whereas earlier in my life I wanted to try everything, and I wanted to master everything, and I wanted to get good at stuff. And
right, yeah, I've been thinking about it a bit as well. Like, before now, you always want more, mm-hmm. right? Like, more experiences, more trips, more languages, more whatever it is, more. But yeah, I'm also starting to think, like, what if, we're talking about languages, but what if I don't learn any other language, like, ever? That's totally fine.
Yeah.
Whereas 3, 4, 5 years ago, I was like, oh, let's add one more to the arsenal, you know, and things like that. But yeah, I think that's, I mean, it comes with age, of course, but always wanting more is ego-driven as well, right? So you start to learn these things, but...
Yeah.
The main thing that I want to, the main message that I want to convey here is that it's fine to just learn one language if that's what you want. We're talking languages now, but it works for anything, right? But Or if you want to focus on, because back to my experience, I thought I was going to miss the other languages, but I'm focusing on German and I'm having a blast. I'm loving it. And obviously that's going to help me because I'm getting 3 hours a day as opposed to 20 minutes. But yeah, I've always had the feeling that if you don't enjoy what you're doing, it's, in the long run, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
I'm actually turning from liking it to loving it right now, right? So I totally agree.
Yeah. And I also think that sort of the, it's interesting that you talk about, is it going to work or is it not going to work, right? Like the end, because that still seems to me like the end goal might be the goal, right? Yeah. Which I've totally had that perspective the last couple of years. But yeah, these days, I'm not even sure what my end goal is with Japanese, and maybe I've peaked. I don't know. All I know is that this fall, at the moment, I'm reading a lot of books in English, and I'm loving it. And I do force myself to study with my sort of spaced repetition systems and stuff like that I use every day, just to kind of keep an acceptable level to myself. But yeah, I'm looking for, and it, all it takes is for like Dragon Quest 12. It's a game that I'm anticipating a lot. I'm going to play the heck out of that game, right, hundreds of hours. And as soon as that comes out, I'm going to be all for it again. And I'm going to play that completely in Japanese. And at that point, it's going to be really urgent to me to get to a high level. I'm probably going to prepare the weeks before, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just feel like our time is finite, man. And I saw a video the other day. It's been circulating a little bit about what happens to the human brain during an impact when you get a concussion, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Have you seen that video?
No.
It's disgusting. It's basically a mold. It's not a true human brain, but it just wobbles completely, and you get the sense that, wow, this is so going to end one day, you know, and then all of this knowledge that we have, we're not going to be able to upload it anywhere. It's going to be for nothing except for the memories we made with other people.
That's true. But yeah, I was just like, final note to the episode, I was just thinking that recently I realized that my sort of obsession for getting exposed to all the different languages, that it was preventing me from enjoying some content in English, for example, because I've already acquired English for the most part. You can always get better, of course, but I can perfectly communicate in any situation. So I don't target English resources. I just naturally come across them and consume them. But I found that because of, again, quote unquote, my obsession with languages, if I had to choose between enjoying a podcast episode in English and some research in French, for example, I would go with the latter, with French, because I was targeting that language and it was going to help me get better. But really, if I truly asked myself what I wanted to watch, it was the former. Mm-hmm. The English one. So I've started to realize that, you know, fuck it. If I feel like watching the English part, even though I don't feel like I need that to improve my English, I'm going to do it because I'm enjoying it. So it was taking me that route a little bit, like languages, like getting obsessed a little bit.
Yeah. And who knows what's best? Because, I mean, you've built your entire life, probably your career, around being in Poland now and teaching Spanish and stuff like that. So your whole life and identity is centered around languages, and sort of mine has become sort of like that as well with the podcast. And
yeah,
I know it sounds like a small thing, but the podcast is a huge part of my life these days. And there's 30,000 plus followers on Spotify alone. So there's that obviously comes with a sort of, it connects to my identity quite a bit, even internally in me. So I don't know what's best. Sometimes it's probably also good to just, you know, in the long run, it's better to go for a run than it is to sit down and play Farmville or something like that. I guess it can be said the same thing about languages, right?
Yeah, right, right.
That it's going to bring a lasting happiness. We're having a philosophical discussion right now, just
when things. Nice. I like that. Yeah. Okay. So, any final message for like language learners out there?
If you're learning Swedish, please consider listening to Lätt Svenska med Oskar. That's my podcast. It's a simple Swedish podcast for beginners. Lätt Svenska med Oskar. And yeah, just stay in love with the language as much as you can, and try not making it about
the end goal, right?
Yeah, the end goal, right? Try to find something that's obviously impossible in the beginning, except you know, Duolingo is kind of a game, I suppose. So you can use that in the beginning.
Yeah. You can watch cartoons, but you can only watch cartoons for so long, right?
So, right. I mean, yeah.
You have to enjoy it, you know?
Yeah. Then at some point, somebody's going to call the police. Well, too many of those. But okay. Yeah, so that's it. And other than that, it's been super fun talking to you, Alvaro.
Same here, Oscar. And yeah, thanks so much. Have a good day. And yeah, I totally agree when it comes to your podcast. I've already said it a couple of times, but I really enjoyed it. And I think it's helpful for people who want to learn the language. Yeah.
Awesome.
And
we
have so many episodes, like you said, which is awesome, which is what it all comes down to in the end. Like, you need time, right? You need to get exposed to the language as much as you can.
Yeah. Which you can also do by watching my YouTube channel, which is also called Lätt Svenska med Oskar. So that's another plug from me right there.
No, of course. I'll leave all the links below, like I said.
Okay, cool.
Thank you, Oskar.
Thank you, Alvaro. Thanks for everybody watching.
Exactly. Hope you enjoyed it. I'm sure you did.
I thought you were talking to me now. I did.
I'm in the audience.
Sure.
Right. So yeah, thank you everyone for watching, and have a good day. Bye-bye. Thanks so much for watching this interview. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope it was helpful for you. And if you want to know more about language learning, language acquisition, like, you know, what's the best way to learn a language, ideas for language learning, the best resources at different levels, here you can find the whole playlist with all the interviews I've done so far with different researchers, teachers, polyglots, and so on. And finally, right here, you smash this guy right in the face to subscribe to my channel. I really appreciate it. And I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye.